On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Todd Kubacki of the Cleveland Indians organization. Todd, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, Chris, hey, man, thanks for having me. It's really good to be able to connect with you and then, you know, ideally connect with some people as we go through this. So, you know, obviously I'm with the Cleveland Indians. My role now, I've kind of transitioned through the organization. I've held several titles, but I'm more into, like, as an analyst now where I'm operating out of the office for the season. I started my career in 2008 with the Indians. I did a year of our low A team, 1 year in double A, 3 years with our triple A team, as all of those as a strength conditioning coach. I then transitioned to our strength conditioning coordinator, held that role for 4 years. And then I moved into a performance coordinator role last year. And this year I've kind of transitioned into more of a analyst role where, you know, a big portion of my job is as we collect more and more data, as we look at more and more streams of, you know, whether that's objective data, wellness, and things of that nature, you know, a big thing is how are we collecting that information? How are we looking at that information? So it's compiling, analyzing, actioning, you know, because I think you'd agree with me is that if we're collecting all information, but we're not finding useful ways to utilize it, then we're probably missing the boat. So that's kind of been a big project of mine is how do we put everything together?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. If you have data with no purpose, it's just kind of data sitting there for no reason. So,
right.
So you've been all over. It sounds like you've been at a ton of levels and you've been around for a long time. So I want to talk about your journey through professional baseball. Maybe some obstacles and difficulties you've experienced along the way, maybe some lessons you've learned, and then where you expect the future of strength and conditioning in professional baseball to go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the landscape of professional baseball, especially with strength and conditioning, but I think really the landscape across minor league baseball has totally changed since I first came in. I think with my first season, in 2008, I was with our Lake County Captains team in the South Atlantic League. You know, and at that time, we were lucky to get peanut butter and jelly before games, and we were dropping our players off at, you know, TGI Fridays post-game and picking them up an hour later and taking them back to the hotel. So I think if you looked at just a nutritional standpoint, you know, we're to the point now where our meals are catered and we're going above and beyond to try to help our athletes in that way. You know, but just the emphasis that's placed on things such as fueling, whether that's nutrition or hydration, rest and recovery, you know, creating opportunities for our athletes to take naps and do different variable things like that, you know, and even a training perspective. So back in 2008, there was challenges to get our athletes to do very much. Over the last 10, 11, 12 years, you know, I think athletes are coming into the organization with a greater training age, a greater understanding of how training is going to impact them. And then they're also more open to doing the little things that are going to help them get a little bit better. So whether that's in the weight room, on the agility field, in the outfield, you know, and then rest recovery, modalities and strategies. You know, so those are some of the really big things. You know, other items are off-season training. You know, what are we doing from an off-season standpoint? I think we started an off-season strength conditioning camp, I want to say 5 years ago, and to see the way that that is built has been really, really special just to have hands-on athletes and not question things. You know, I don't want to ramble too much, but then additionally, just looking at the way that the interaction has gone between the strength conditioning professional at the organization and the personal trainers that the athletes use, I think that's a huge relationship that has continued to build over the last few years, and it's something that I think we need to continue on.
For sure, man. Yeah, a lot of good stuff there, and I've heard the stories of like PB&Js back in the day, and we're kind of in the same spot. Like nutrition is a big thing that we are emphasizing now. It's something that we can help with. The weight room is kind of the weight room, right? Like we all do similar stuff in there, and it's finding that competitive advantage outside of it. And I think nutrition is kind of where it's going in the future of how we can help the athletes out a lot.
Yep. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I think, you know, what you do in the weight room, you can have different philosophies there. We're all striving for the same things, but you're right. It's how we find the little things that really impact our athletes. And I can remember being in Lakewood, New Jersey, and the clubhouse manager was 11 years ago now, bringing in a box of hot dogs from the stadium after the game, and guys crushing them, loving it, right? And if we saw that nowadays, we would probably have, we would take umbrage with that.
Yeah, it's funny. Now it's like guys are complaining that you have steak too frequently. So if you bring in a box of hot dogs, they might actually enjoy it at this point.
Yeah, you're not kidding. But yeah, it's been interesting to see that revolution, not only from the team perspective, the strength coach perspective, the athletic training perspective, or whoever is doing that on our side of things, but then also to see visiting clubhouse managers, you know, upping their game there because they understand that players are going to want these things more. So I think it is really a unified approach across the board, and you see the spectrum of all of the different parties really understanding the impact that that has on performance. And, you know, I think once we get everybody on the same page with those things, it'll just be easier and easier.
Yeah, I agree completely, man. 100%. So you've been all over. What is the biggest lesson that you've taken away from being a strength coach at low levels all the way up to being a coordinator?
I think the biggest lesson is meeting the player where they're at. And so what I mean by that is that I've seen players come in at 18 years old with a greater training age than a player who's maybe been around for quite some time and is in their mid to late 20s. And so a lot of that just comes from, you know, where are they from? What have they done? So rather than looking at a level by level and trying to program that way, or, you know, really just trying to bucket players. I'm thinking about the best way to talk about this, but it really is identifying, assessing, monitoring each athlete, identifying what are the things that are going to really impact them, what are their KPIs or key performance indicators, and tailoring what your offerings are for the individual as well as the team, right? Because I think you can create buckets, but then inside of those buckets, you'll be able to find individuals that maybe have different needs, are more advanced, less advanced, you know. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing, is not trying to, you know, jam a square peg through a round hole. It's just understanding who everybody is. And then again, like we talk about again, as we're collecting information, whether that's, you know, strength numbers, power numbers, vertical jump numbers, subjective wellness, you know, whatever the case might be, utilizing that to make sure that the program that you're asking the athlete to complete is actually going to impact the athlete, you know, optimally.
I gotcha. You can disagree with me on this one, but from what I've heard back in the day, there was a lot less full-time strength coaches. And I think having full-time guys and having less turnover would probably help with being able to individualize guys. They spend more time with them. They're probably more educated as full-time strength coaches of your system that you want to run. And I would assume that's probably helping strength coaches. And you've probably seen that through your years of more full-time strength coaches and probably better quality of training kind of going hand in hand. Would you agree? Would you disagree?
Yeah, no question about it. Man, when I came in 2008, you know, it was a seasonal part-time salary, right? And so we were getting paid, or I was getting paid for, you know, spring training through the end of the season. I was fortunate enough to live close enough to Cleveland, and our major league strength coach at the time, Tim Maxey, was you know, kind enough to let me still come and hang out in the off seasons in the weight room and just kind of, you know, soak in as much experience as I can. You know, and as we've progressed, you know, I think all of our positions are full-time. I know there's a lot of clubs out there that have moved to that model. And so less turnover, more understanding of the ins and outs of professional baseball, more understanding of the ins and outs of training the baseball player, you know, it's tremendous. I don't think the jobs have moved from whether they ever were, but they are no longer stepping stone positions. I think they are careers, you know, and so you get more guys coming in that are really passionate and really want to do a great job with baseball players, and they want to stay in it for the long haul rather than just a place to get experience.
Yeah, like I said, I've been hearing it from some of my mentors that back in the day there were way less coaches and way more responsibilities, and it was totally different versus now. Like you said, you can make a career out of being at any level. Because everybody's full time, or just about everybody. So, what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing? You've seen a lot, so I'm interested in this one.
You know what, it's funny because I think with the advent of social media and Twitter and all of the different avenues in which you could collect information and get other people's perspectives, I'm really not sure that there's any type of thought process that the rest of the world would think you're crazy about. There's so many different vantage points, and I'm of the mindset that, you know, there's a thousand ways to train a guy. You know, to steal a line from Buddy Morris, who's the strength conditioning coach for the Arizona Cardinals, one of the things that I believe in is, you know, the basics are the basics for a reason. It's because they work, right? And he makes a great point, and he says, too often we try to baffle everyone with brilliance. And so what I mean by that is I think as we continue to progress, ensuring that we are knocking out the big stones and ensuring that we are focused on the basics, we are focused on, you know, almost treating the programming as the scientific method, right? We have outcomes that we want to achieve because we've tested, assessed, and monitored our athletes. So we understand, you know, where do we need to go with player A, B, C, D, the organization or the team. And we're able to apply a stimulus to that player, to that team. And then we go back and we test and we assess and we monitor again to understand whether or not that worked. So rather than trying to go A to Z, I think if we can focus on A, B, C, really make sure that we are locking those in. And that might include, you know, simply strength, speed mechanics, nutrition, hydration, sleep quality, and duration. You know, then we're in a really good place. So, you know, sometimes I think the more basic or general you are, the better you are. And at times that might be viewed as crazy.
Yeah, it's funny how crazy, quote unquote, the basics seem to people just because there's social media and like guys will come up to you and be like, hey, what do you think about this exercise? And it's like the most lucrative thing ever. And you're like, can't you just like, can't you just deadlift or squat or, you know, do your glute activation? Like, you know, just do it this way. And they're like, ah, but I saw this. And it's like the basics are kind of becoming the crazy thing and the crazy things are kind of becoming the norm.
Right.
Which is insane, but that's.
You know, and if your athletes are prepared and ready to do some of these more advanced techniques, then God bless you, right? But I think at some level, and again, it's going back to meeting the athlete where they are, understanding like what is going to really impact these athletes. I think sometimes you'll talk about the transference from the weight room to the field, and you know, maybe I'm on the crazier side to think that there's not as much transference from the weight room to the field as we would like to think. There's transference from the weight room to your ability. It underpins your strength, your speed, or you know, your strength that you develop in the weight room underpins speed, it'll underpin explosiveness, but we've also got to move fast, right? If you look at the ground force reactions and the stress on musculoskeletal system during max effort sprinting, swinging and throwing, it's really hard to replicate those things in the weight room. So being general in the weight room, getting more specific on the field and understanding the level of specificity at which our athletes work every day in the cage and on the mound and in the infield, you know, I think it's kind of understanding that chain and that sequence of events.
That's absolute gold right there. That's like you probably couldn't have said it better if you want to describe what a strength coach does in baseball and the philosophy and everything. At least in my mind.
Yeah,
Maybe other people will think we're both crazy.
for sure.
So you've been a coordinator, you've hired people. What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Like when you're in that role and you're hiring somebody and you want them to succeed, what does success look like?
You know what, you're right. Kind of bringing people in, and not only in a professional setting, but also like people I know personally. So when folks would ever say, hey, I'm really interested in being a strength conditioning coach in professional baseball, I think the number one thing I would say, if you want to get into professional baseball, is you've got to love it. Because I think at some level, being a professional baseball, it becomes your lifestyle rather than just your job or your career. And you know as well as anybody. You said you're in Binghamton right now, so you're on the road, you're away from your family more than you'd like to be. And, you know, if you don't truly love what you're doing on a day in and day out basis, it's going to be really hard for you, not only in the short term, but in the long term. And then I think just some qualities that you'd love to have your folks to have is accountability. And I think that's accountability on a personal level. So can you hold yourself accountable to doing the things that you know, are expected of you from an organizational standpoint? Oftentimes you're on your own, and oftentimes you're on an island with a team. And then accountability in the sense that, can you hold your players accountable for the things that are expected of them? There's a lot of traits, and I think it really comes down to, ethics, empathy, and some different variables like that. But, subject matter expertise, really important, but you'll develop that as time goes. So it's really finding people who are going to be great fits for the organization and are going to really, beat the drum for the things that are really important to the development of the individual and the development of the program in the organization.
Right on, man. I like that. It becomes a lifestyle. It's not just a career, because it really isn't. It affects so many people other than just yourself. There's so many sacrifices that your family has to make for you. You have to make for them. And if you're not truly invested in that, it's a tough, tough lifestyle to get through.
Absolutely.
So what advice do you have for others in the field, maybe young guys that want to move up through the ranks, or older guys that have been in for a while who are just trying to keep the sword sharp?
Sure.
What advice do you have?
I think it's keeping the main thing the main thing, and it's continuing to focus on, what is going to make you a better coach, what is going to make you more valuable to the organization, and I think oftentimes – the one piece that we might miss is what is going to make you a better human, a better person, because great coaches are generally pretty great people. So for me, I think if we're looking at what are the resources that we'd like to implement and utilize, almost periodizing what you're looking at, whether that's strength and conditioning material. If you're reading super training or transfer training, those are great. But at some level, are you also going back onto the other side and looking at some leadership books, whether that's, I read a great one this year, it's called Lead Yourself First, which I would recommend to a lot of people. I think with what we do, we're constantly around people. We're constantly with people, and very little time do we get on our own and really clear our thoughts and just ensure and continue to take inventory of what we have going on and whether we're doing the things that are right for everybody or not. And I think that book kind of talks about that a little bit. And then also thinking about the system as a whole. So, The Brain That Changes Itself is a great book. Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers is a book that kind of changed my perspective on a lot of different things. So I recommend that as well.
Yeah, I try to find a little bit of balance with my stuff, man. Sometimes you just got to get away from the strength and conditioning stuff and realize that there is other things that are out there that are going to help you succeed. And like we said, especially in this field, in baseball, you can know the X's and O's, but things can change super fast. And if you can't connect and relate to guys, like if you're just strictly subject matter guy, like you might stumble in this field.
Yeah, no question. I think, so some of the folks that I try to listen to, whether that's Buddy Morris or, Dan Pfaff, who's out, he's in Phoenix with Altus, and the level of education that those folks continue to subject themselves to with the discussions of, ensuring that every day you're getting some type of education. And I think that's a great lesson. If you can find an hour a day, to take, to read, to listen, if you're commuting to work, throw an audiobook on, just continue to find opportunities, to fit it in. Because as we talked about, the job becomes a life, it becomes a lifestyle. So if you're at the ballpark from 10 to midnight, you may not have a big chance to sit down and do some good studying and do some good research. But, if the 15 minutes in and the 15 minutes out, you can pop an audiobook in and kind of kill two birds with one stone. I think you could, really make an impact over the course of a year.
Yeah, the opportunities are there. You just got to kind of find them. So
yeah, no question about it.
Along those lines, let's talk continuing ed. I got books, podcasts, seminars. You mentioned a few guys and a few books. Is there anything else you want to throw in there for the listeners that are kind of must checkouts?
Man, there's so much out there right now. You can really inundate yourself with a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom, and that's one of the keys, right? Is being able to take that information, take the education, take the reading, take the podcast, and really create some good wisdom with that and find the application. So, from book standpoints, I've gotten into audiobooks quite a bit. I've got a little bit of a commute to work, so it's been really good to knock those out. From a podcast standpoint, there's a podcast called, I think it's the OPEX podcast now with Robbie Burke. It used to be called All Things Health and Wellness. It seems like that's transitioned recently, but I've enjoyed that. The Pace Performance podcast, I think, is one that's constantly got some good things on there. There's some folks out there that I enjoy listening to, and so I'll just search them, whether that's Dan Path, Brian Mann, Buddy Morris. There's some different folks out there who've been in the game or been in the industry forever, right? I think Dan Path is one of the smartest coaches that I've ever listened to. I had the opportunity to be at Altus several years back, and he was present. He came over and started talking to myself and Tampa Bay's coordinator, Pat Trainer, and the questions that he was asking us, and just the absolute intellect. You know, it was one of those situations where you get done with the conversation, you go to your car, and you think, okay, I've got to go home and order 15 books now. It's finding the folks that I think that they're going to challenge you, whether that's in a personal relationship and you know them, or that you can listen to and read, and they're going to continually challenge you to think, outside the box. It's finding people who you don't necessarily agree with all the time, because if we're always only reading and thinking about the things that we absolutely believe in, we're probably not going to expand our thought process very far.
Yeah, I have my go-tos that I like to listen to, and sometimes I keep finding myself going back to them, and I'm like, I need to find somebody
exactly
else. And so I'll find like random podcast episodes. I'm like, all right, I'm going to listen to this one and see what this person has, and see what they got. And then, I mean, this podcast for me is kind of like those conversations. Like, somebody will mention a book and I'll order it off Amazon, and before you know it, I've got 25 books that I need to read, and I'm like, this is a little too many books. But so I had one the other day. As soon as we got off, I ordered 3 books from it, and now they're getting ready to read in the off season. So those are the best kind of conversations, man, where you walk away and you're like just stimulated intellectually.
Yeah, no question about it. I don't know if you've heard of the app Goodreads.
Goodreads, yes.
So that's been pushed on me, or it's been recommended, and I've gotten on that, and it's really interesting to see, to create a network and be able to, see what other people are reading, what they want to read, what they think of those books, and kind of open yourself up to this huge book network, right? And, at times you just become one of those people and ends up reading all the time. But there's probably worse things to do.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. It's like, we got long bus rides here, and the one time I was reading, and I was like, I've been reading for like 5 hours straight and just didn't even realize it. Like, oh my God, I should probably get a little sleep. But there's probably worse things.
No doubt.
So I'd like to do a lightning round with you. What do you got on that? You cool with it?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. All right. First one, biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning. Who is it?
For me personally or overall?
For you personally.
Oh, man. Host of folks. Obviously, like I mentioned, Dan Path, incredible resource. Try to listen to everything he has to say. Todd Berkey was a guy that gave me an opportunity at Youngstown State when I was just getting out of college. And Tim Maxey, who gave me a start here at the Cleveland Indians and provided a tremendous amount of information and knowledge to young strength coach.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Squat rack.
Okay. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Biggest accomplishment personally was marrying my wife, because I definitely output in my coverage there. And from a professional standpoint, to have been a part of the process to develop off-season strength conditioning camps and to see the development of athletes on that level.
Yeah, you always have to throw the wife in on this one. Everybody that's married on here is like, wife, definitely wife. Huh? Okay, good. Good. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I was a math guy in college, so I've always kind of had an interest in wealth management, financial advising, if I were to get out of this industry, I think.
Straight math or like engineering math?
So I was a math minor, so just general math, yeah.
Okay. Same. So I was engineering my first semester. I loved math and I loved science, and I found out I liked lifting more than either of those things. So made a
Once
little
I
bit of
out about the opportunities, I was the same way. I was like, oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah, right on. Well, it's been fun, man. I appreciate you coming on. There's been a ton of good stuff here. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more information from you?
You know what? I think the best method would be probably just to reach out and create a conversation. So you can email me at todd.kubacki@gmail.com. So that's todd.kubacki@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, like I said, appreciate you coming on, man, and we'll be catching up soon.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Todd. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was really cool to hear about his journey through the field and where he thinks it's going in the future. Three things that I took from Todd: meet the athletes where they're at, find people who challenge you, and find time to learn daily. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.